Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it.
Well, good evening, hello, and welcome to this fifth edition of the Back of the Net podcast. Back of the Net is an independent football website covering the A-League and its predecessors for more than 10 years now, also covering W-League and National Youth League. Find us on the internet at www.back-of-the-net.com. That's Back of the Net with hyphens between all of the words. And on the line from Sydney, we have Chris Dunkley, the editor of Back of the Net. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, guys. Hi, listeners.
And we have in the Brisbane studios of Back of the Net, Adrian Demack.
Hi, Andrew.
And my name is Andrew Demack, and I am your host. So it's an exciting time to be a fan of the A-League, and there's still heaps going on, even though the grand final is now more than a week ago. And we're going to try and cover back some of those, some of the things that have gone on. But we're going to wind ourselves back to the 22nd of April to start with. And Adrian and I were in different parts of the crowd at Suncorp Stadium. There were 50,000 other people there, and they had a fantastic evening, including a really good section of Perth Glory fans. I suppose we could sort of go through the match highlights, Adrian, and you can jump in and tell me whenever you like the things that stood out to you.
Sure.
But early on in the match, Perth certainly came out and pressed Brisbane very high up the pitch. Brisbane were attempting to play their normal style of football, where they play out from the back and build steadily forward. And Perth certainly made a really strong effort in the first half at disrupting that. And pretty much the major incident of the first half of the grand final was about halfway through the first half. Brisbane attempting to play out from the back, Matt Smith on the ball, and he is challenged by the Perth centre forward Shane Smeltz. What happened next, Adrian?
Well, Matt Smith put his arms up to protect himself from the challenge, and Shane Smeltz went straight into his elbow with his nose. I had to get 50 stitches after the game, and it looked like it would be quite painful. He did have to stay on the field for that whole getting stitched up and everything, and as, you know, a fan in the stands, I wasn't too happy that he was staying on the pitch for that, but after the whole wash-up of it, it seems like it was probably warranted to stay on the pitch.
Yes, he was certainly getting plenty of encouragement from the sidelines to move off the pitch, but obviously he was in no state to do that. Incredibly brave of Smeltz to play on, especially when we all saw the photos later on of what he had actually done to himself. It was pretty gruesome stuff.
I think of some of those 50-50s he went for, just at halfway. You don't have to go for those. It's okay. Calm down.
Well, it's straight after he got stitched up. Shane Smeltz was really fired up, wasn't he, for the next 10 minutes or so. He was charging into everything.
Yeah.
And it just looked to me like he was going to do more damage to himself, but he is obviously a very brave man and integral to Perth. But I do think that that injury and maybe the after effects took something out of him, because he didn't have a great deal of impact in the second half and was subbed eventually.
Yep.
Okay, so they went to the break at nil all, even though Brisbane, of course, had more of the ball as they tend to do, they really didn't threaten all that much in the first half. You'd agree with that, Adrian?
Yeah, I'd agree. I can't remember any incident. Now it's been a week, you know.
Yeah. And Chris, I'm sure you were watching this from the comfort of your home.
Yeah, I was out covering a state league game live, but I got back just in time to see most of the first half, and it was a bit of, you know, one of those grand finals or finals where nobody really wants to make a mistake in the first half.
It was very tense the first half, that's for sure, and it certainly wasn't it. There was not much free flowing football in it, and in the second half they started pretty much in the same sort of way. Brisbane were starting to make a few inroads. Broich in particular was making things difficult for Vukovic, and I seem to recall about the 50th minute, there's one time where he beats the fullback and cuts inside and has a really powerful shot that Vukovic just sort of palmed away. But then it pretty much went straight down the other end, Billy Mehmet got the ball and fed it out to Travis Dodd, and Travis Dodd has attempted to cross the ball. It's rebounded back out to him. He's had a second cross, and that second cross had gone through a sort of sea of players and come off either Ivan Franich's shin or his ankle or his knee and rebounded into the net. It certainly was a surprising turn of events, Adrian.
Very much so. Ivan didn't know much about it either. He did chuck his foot out, but he certainly didn't want it to go that way.
No. And 50,000 people went very, very quiet, or 48,000 people went very, very quiet, and however many purple-clad visiting fans were there went absolutely off their nuts. It was certainly a great sound for them and a great moment for the travelling fans.
Brought back my memories from last year. Yeah.
I was about to say that, Chris. You would have been watching and going, yes! Right about at that point of time, I am sure.
Not so much, yes, but it was just bringing back the memories of what a great occasion it was last year and the atmosphere. And if you're an away fan, it's quite... intimidating, and when that silence goes around the ground and you're the one that can be heard, that's something special.
It is indeed. And from that moment, obviously Postecoglou worked out that he would need to change things, and so he brought on Fitzgerald and he brought on Luke Bratton. It was interesting from my position with the people I was sitting with when he bought off Partalufa to bring on Bratton. People were a bit concerned about that, but I think it proved to be a good move because Bratton is certainly a much more of an offensive threat than Partalu is. And I think having Fitzgerald and him on the field at the same time really livened things up for the Raw. And they were certainly on top for the next little while without really making a million chances. And at that point of the game, sort of about the 70th minute, I was starting to think that this was one that was going to get away from us again. I don't know, Adrian, whether you had those same sorts of feelings?
Yeah, well, we were still getting into the game and we still were trying to do things, but it just wasn't happening for us. It could have been one of those days that just doesn't happen.
And as fans of the Brisbane Roar, we're reasonably used to, over the last couple of years, them leaving it late to make anything really happen, and I think it was finally about the 84th or 85th minute that Browich got the ball from a throw-in out on the left, looked up, and put across into to the near post that Berisha met at the near post with a really, really powerful header past Vukovic, and it was certainly a moment where the two star Brisbane Roar players just for a couple of seconds put it together very nicely, and no controversy about the first goal.
No, beautiful.
It was a beautiful header. From both players, yeah.
And at that moment with one all, I was pretty confident or pretty sure that what we were going to see was the full 2 hours. Well, I thought we were going to extra time. Certainly the Raw kept pressing, but it seemed to me most likely that what we were going to have was extra time. And I thought, well, that won't be too bad. That'll be a bit of fun. But then the fourth officials held up the board for 3 minutes of extra play. We played at least 3 minutes before Thomas Browich again had the ball. This time it was much more central, and he sort of danced around a bit, had a look up, found Berisha inside the box, and Berisha is surrounded by at least three Perth players when he receives the ball. He sort of wriggles and jiggles and dances a bit and finally gets clear, is about to pull the trigger when he goes down in a heap. And 48,000 people again yelled out penalty. Jared Gillette indeed points to the spot.
And very quickly.
Very quickly points to the spot. He was in a pretty good position, is my memory of it, but he was pretty quick to go. Berisha's hit the ground and Jared Gillette has said penalty. From where I was certainly on my feet yelling for a penalty. Then they showed the replay on the big screen, and I've gone, oh, no, it's not a penalty. He's just had an air swing. And I am sure that many other people in the stadium thought the same as I did, which was, on first look, at normal speed, when it happened, we were sure it was a penalty because why else would Berisha have fallen over? But then when the replay was shown, it looked so much like just an air swing. Adrian, how did you see it?
Well, yeah, at the time I thought penalty, and I didn't actually see any replays at the stadium because I was jumping and doing all sorts of stupid things. Yep. But then
as you would.
Yeah, exactly. But then when I've gone back and watched it, in slow motion maybe, but then in super slow motion, that's when you see the touch and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, which always begs the question for other people. Then Jared Gillette has called this at normal speed. Is he superhuman, or did he make a mistake? And actually, he's very lucky.
That's the other thing. We've both seen it in normal speed, and we both called penalty, and that's all that the ref gets. And he didn't make a hesitation or anything. He went straight for the spot, and that's what he's seen in his you know couple of seconds that he's had to decide. Then that's kind of what he has to do.
How did you see it, Chris?
When it happened, I thought no, not a penalty.
Yep. Because you can see better on TV than you can from in the stands.
Yeah, because of course we had the advantage of. You know, replays and so on.
Yep.
And even swinging around to see where the referee had been. After all, you know, the week or 10 days of controversy, I'm still not convinced one way or the other, which may seem strange. Yep. But
there's lots of opinions about it. I mean, certainly
it's one of those things where if you're going to have a penalty given, giving it in stoppage time of stoppage time,
yeah.
Number one's going to give cause for complaint.
Yep.
Yes, there were enough stoppages to make it within stoppage time.
Yep.
People say he was coming from offside position. Yes.
Yes.
That could have been called or may not have been called. It's one of those line ball things.
Yep.
Yep.
Did he push Miller? Well, maybe.
Yep.
Did Miller touch Bessart's leg? Well, all the pundits are saying that there's, you know, with forensic certainty, that his leg was touched and pushed out of shape or something.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure about that one either. did Bessart dive? No.
Yeah.
But he certainly fell over. He certainly fell over.
Yeah.
And then ran around like a bit of a chook claiming a foul. So...
Well, he's running around mostly after Gillette's blown the whistle, which is, you know, a very funny reaction. I think he was obviously very excited.
Relief, I think, as well.
Yeah, relieved.
Has anyone seen Bessart Berisha play the game before, though? That's a pretty normal reaction for Bessart Berisha,
yeah,
I think.
I would think any time he wins a penalty, you're going to see that sort of reaction from him.
And then you go back to the laws of the game, Law 12, and have a look at what it says, and you think, well, you know, does it really... Did that touch, if it was one, actually cover fall within the definitions of the law? So, you know, I've come to the stage where he gave it. He was the guy who was put in the position to make it. And he made it. It was scored. It probably would have been good to have gone on, you know, to extra time. But I think that would have swung things back slightly in Perth's favour because I think they may have had more legs. And certainly, you know, when you get to penalties, anything can happen. So.
It's certainly when you get to penalties, anything can happen. From the perspective of obviously as a Raw fan, but being at the game, the Perth had very little left in their tank, in my view, and Brisbane was still going forward with considerable energy. So it seemed to me like if we went to extra time, it would have been 30 more minutes of exactly the same as the last 20 minutes of the match,
hitting each other with. Yeah, wet towels or something, you know.
Would have got slower and slower, but I think in those situations, Perth would have had to have been camped inside their own penalty box, and the likelihood of a penalty or a raw goal was you know the most likely outcome. But you know all of those are entirely hypothetical, and who knows what would have happened. What we do know for sure is that Jared Gillette did blow for a penalty, and Berisha. Put the penalty away himself, which I think was a very wise move for him to take on the role of penalty taker.
Yeah.
And Brisbane won the match. And then in the aftermath, of course, one of the things that happens these days is you can hear the interviews with the captains and those sort of people on the ground. So Mel McLaughlin and Adam Peacock are there interviewing the on the ground people and Mel interviews Matt Smith first, and then Adam Peacock had a chat to Jacob Burns, and Jacob Burns was understandably absolutely filthy about the decision and was quite restrained in his interview, but obviously was very, very upset. And the most entertaining on-the-ground interview I've ever heard was from Bessart Berisha, who was down near the den at that point in time, and it was pretty funny. And the entire crowd was going off, so that was great fun. Then they went to the presentations, and at the presentation, of course, as we all know, Thomas Broich was handed the Joe Marston Medal. And as soon as that was announced, I believe that in the press box there are people who were among those who were tasked with voting on that medal, all saying, well, I didn't vote for Broich, did you? And so pretty soon it was worked out in the press box that Broich couldn't have won the medal. And indeed, Jacob Burns was the person who had won the medal, and he had to be given it later on. So I have no idea how that can happen, how that can possibly happen at a presentation, but that is what happened, and it kind of added to the overall unbelievability of the last 20 minutes of the game and the what happened after.
I think relying on some sort of voice transmission of the who it was probably not a good move, given the amount of noise that would have been going on.
Oh, absolutely.
So perhaps a text message or something might have been a bit more reliable.
Is that what we've heard happen? So somebody called somebody and said it's Jacob Burns, and the person heard it's Thomas Broich. I mean, the names don't sound very similar. No. Burns, Broich, maybe they do. Who knows? But that was the grand final.
It's 45,000 people still on the ground, all having a good party. Maybe it was a bit noisy.
Yeah, it certainly was. And so, from the perspective of the Brisbane Roar fans, of course, they're all happy with the second championship in a row. The Perth owner, Tony Sage, and a few of the Perth people profess their disappointment, obviously, about the penalty decision. But at the end of the day, I think Perth gave everything they had in that grand final. And to me, it was not enough to win. Now, friends, at that point of our Skype recording, we had a bit of a technical problem. And so to cover the gap in the smoothest way possible, let's go back to the grand final itself. And on the occasion, I took my iPhone out of my pocket and recorded the match presentation and the crowd response to it. Let's have a quick listen to that.
Thank you, Jacob. Congratulations to Perth Glory on a fabulous season. Now can I ask Mr. Edward Lee to step forward once again and present the Hyundai A-League 2012 Grand Final Championship Trophy to the winning Brisbane Roar captain, Matt Smith.
Okay, so sorry, we're interrupted by technical difficulties there, but we might move on from the grand final into the aftermath of the grand final, because the A-League news just never stops coming. And it was actually on the day of the sort of ticker tape parade through the city that the next bit of news came to light, was that Ange Postecoglou has indeed decided to leave Brisbane Roar, and he was later in that same week announced as the coach of Melbourne Victory. This wasn't a great surprise to anybody, I don't think.
No, not really, but it's a little disappointing, you know.
It is very disappointing from a Brisbane Roar perspective. I'd like to get Chris's perspective on this. Chris, would you have, if you were Ange Postecoglou, would you be jumping ship from Brisbane Roar and going to Melbourne Victory?
I believe there were some personal, preferences, family and so on in there from what people said, but I'm not sure it's a great move at this stage. I mean, he's got an opportunity to rebuild something at Melbourne Victory, but they haven't shown a great track record in recent years of being able to support the coach very well. So,
yeah, I mean, that's...
wonder what he's going to.
Yeah, that's the thing that seems surprising to me, because when he came to the Roar, he said to the board, look, you'll need to back me, and it's going to take a couple of years to get this set up. But the Melbourne Victory people have always seemed to be all about instant success, and they have to be at the top of the league every single year. And for the first half a season that Ange was with the Roar, they were going terrible, and it took an entire sort of pre-season for them to to really understand what he was about and for him to reshape the side to the sort of side he wanted. And if you look at the Melbourne Victory squad, it doesn't have the type of players that he wants. He's got a lot of players he needs to get rid of and bring in the sort of players that he wants to work with, which are very fit, usually quite young, and players who want to play a short passing possession game. So I'd be interested to see how he manages that. But certainly that's Ange's decision. And
obviously he wanted a new challenge.
Yeah.
The next challenge may be overseas and then possibly back to national level. But
yeah, I'd really like to see him coaching at a higher level in Europe. I think that'd be great, but it seems probably unlikely for an Australian coach to get that chance.
But go to somewhere in Asia.
In Asia,
J League or something.
Yep. Adrian, you're still with us?
Yep.
Oh, that's good. I was just checking. but so yes, Ange Postecoglou has left the Brisbane Roar. Rado Vidicic, the assistant coach of the Brisbane Roar since season one of the Hyundai A-League, has been appointed now as head coach. Once again, this seemed to be the logical step that everybody was saying would happen, and it did indeed happen. I wonder how the Roar will go under Rado. I mean, they've just finished up their first game with him at the helm, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But it seems a big step for an assistant. Somebody who's been an assistant for 7 years to take the step of being the head coach is a big move.
If he's not ready now, when is he going to be ready, really? I mean, he's been the major tactician behind most of Roar's play for the last 7 years. So he should be well-suited to be able to step up and be part of the team, really.
What's his background? Has he had any state league?
He was actually a PE teacher at the high school just up the road from us before he became the assistant coach at the Roar. So I'm not sure if he has any state league stuff before that, but that's all I know that he did before.
And that particular high school has a school of excellence for soccer that's actually
Westfield. Yeah.
So there you go. So that's what's happened at the Brisbane Roar. There's still a few things to be decided in terms of the coaching positions within the A-League for next season. So
as of 9:30 last night, Arnie was still with Mariners.
Yes. Melbourne Heart haven't announced a coach as far as I'm aware, but the other big decision was that Frank Lowy decided to jump on a plane and go and have a chat with Nathan Tinkler, and the end result was that Hunter Sports Group are back on board as the owners and operators of the Newcastle United Jets, which I'm sure for all of the Jets fans is a huge sigh of relief. I know that from my perspective, I was devastated when that first bit of news came out and really concerned that we were going to end up with a 19 league again. But it seems they've sorted things out, and it seems that some of the brinkmanship that we've seen from these billionaire owners is finally reaping some changes from the FFA. Who knows whether it was a good way to do it or not, but they now have a joint strategic committee between the owners and the FFA, and there seems to be a bit more dialogue occurring. What do people think about all of that?
Oh, we can just hope that what we're being told is what's going to happen. I mean, being an ex-Newcastle Breakers fan and having a long history in the game, I know what Newcastle football history and fans are like, and they certainly deserve to have a team, even though I'm a Mariners fan.
Yes.
So I'm really happy about that. I'm not too sure where it's leaving their national youth team, which has been playing in the NBN League and had been taken back over by the Federation and also the W League. So yeah. There's some of that fine-tuning still to come, I think, how that's going to work out.
We'll wait to hear what goes on with that. But, I mean, there are still a whole lot of unanswered, I think, questions about the lack of transparency we get from the FFA. Things like announcing the Western Sydney team that seemed to come out of nowhere, and the fact that it's still wholly owned, I understand, by the FFA, when every other team isn't, is also a bit of an anomaly. But there's going to be 10 teams next season, and Western Sydney's going to be one of them. So that's a good step forward. Obviously, the Gold Coast experiment has been deemed a failure, and we go from having three teams from Queensland back down to one again. So that's a bit of a step backwards.
I think the biggest one was Fury last year. I think that was the worst decision. But anyway.
Yep. Well, we would certainly agree that Fury should have at least been given another year. But anyway,
what they were thinking with the Gold Coast, though. I just don't think the Gold Coast works for sport in general, really. There's just too much else to do on the Gold Coast for them to want to watch sport.
Yeah, and the Gold Coast is a funny city in that it doesn't have a centre. It is just a 40 kilometres worth of stretched outness along the beach. And so there's no natural affinity. You're not naturally built around a particular geographical thing other than the beach.
Mm.
And so the Gold Coast as a city doesn't have what you'd call a city heart. And I think that's part of why there's no sort of community feeling about it on the coast as well. But, you know, obviously those decisions have been made and we are where we are. So from next year, there'll be a 10-team A-League and Western Sydney will be part of that.
So but, anything can happen the next 6 months or so.
Well, that's right. Another long off season, but just to keep us entertained for a little while longer, we hope during the off season will be the Asian Champions League, and we're so thrilled that last night at Gosford, Chris was there to see the Mariners finally find some form within the Asian Champions League competition. Chris, how did this one go?
Well, I mean, if you look at the game against Songnam two weeks ago, it's like a totally different team, even though most of the players were the same ones. The 2 weeks rest certainly made a difference.
Yep.
And 3 weeks rest for Pej Bojic particularly made a difference.
And having him on the field, I think, was a big step up for the Mariners.
Having both of them on the field, and that will be a problem, which I'll come to about the next game. But, I mean, it was a bit... Everybody had their heart in their mouths within 2 minutes when there was a loose ball and Sjordaz, the tall striker, blonde striker, got past Wilkinson and hit the post. Fortunately, the ball rebounded well away and there was nobody else who'd been backing him up. So that was a bit of a wake-up call. And from then on, really, the Mariners just kept ramping it up. So that particularly an interesting combination with Adam Kwasniak and Danny McBreen up front. Danny McBreen pushed much, much higher than he normally is and just sort of ghosting around with Adam Kwasniak buzzing around, picking up balls and trying to link with both Rose and Bojic. And that paid off in the 20th minute when... Bojic got up, we did a bit of 1-2 with Malcolm Lynch. He got up to the line on the right and crossed the ball right to where Danny McBreen was just standing on the edge of the far side of the box and just sort of steered the ball past the keeper, Yang Kui Peng. So that was 1-0. 10 minutes later, McBreen again. I mean, he hasn't been scoring. He's been putting them into Brisbane Water and under the bowling green behind the stadium. Anywhere but in the net, but this was the second one. Bojic made another run down the right. This time he slipped the ball again in sly. He slipped inside and slot the ball across to McBreen. Again, marked, but not really being picked up properly, and he just slammed the ball again past the keeper.
I think you could have scored that one, Chris. I mean, it was really on a plate, the second one, wasn't it?
I don't know. I played at an exhibition game in North Sydney Oval and put it up into the fig tree before Northern Spirit game once. Then there was a chance for Tianjin, Liao Bezhou, who was showing signs of being a bit of a danger man, sending a really wicked curling cross, but evaded everybody. I mean, all his own men, all the defenders, and eventually Wilkinson got it out. That was really much... You know, that was happening during this first half. Mariners just kept going, and they looked as though, you know, we're just going to eventually wear them down. Although everybody around me was saying, oh, 2-0 scoreline, 2-0 scoreline at half time.
Yep.
This is a bit of a danger.
It is a danger score. Yep.
So it was a bit of a relief to us all. when Joshua Rose netted. McGreen got a ball pushed out to the left, and he pushed up, sent the ball through a few legs to Adam Kwasniak. He was blocked on the edge of the box, and the ball bounced back out to Joshua Rose, who'd been following up, and slammed it into the top right-hand corner of the net, so 3-0.
With his right
Everybody's
foot.
A bit of relief, and the players' relief, I think.
Yeah.
That seemed to give them make them much more relaxed in their game, and, you know, they looked as though they were going to go on with it, and they did to a degree. You know, the fourth goal didn't come until the 71st minute. McGlinchey eventually picked up a ball that had been bouncing around, about four players had tried to push it. You know, a shot on goals that had come back out, cleared off the line by a defender, punched out by the keeper. He got it just on the edge of the box and just curled it into the top corner. The keeper was nowhere in sight.
Yep.
So that made it 4-0. You know, now, with a five goal deficit from that last game, where could they take this game now? And as everybody's thinking, well, can we go to five or go to six? That man, Lee Biao-Cho, picked up a loose ball, a long ball down the left, came sailing inside, passed a couple of defenders, and just shot low and hard past Ryan in the left-hand side of his net. So, a bit of a shock to system, 4-1. But it really only seemed a matter of time before they would extend that lead, and certainly the pile driver from Mustafa Amini, when he came on playing his last game at home, hopefully he'll play in Nagoya, just latched onto the ball and 35-metre bang at the top of the net, 5-1. So that was a pretty good night. Only 4,155 fans there, but they certainly were fairly vocal, and there was a good little group of Tianjin Tata fans there as well in their purple.
Yep. Well, it's great work with the Chinese names there, by the way, Chris. But it certainly seemed like a total turnaround for the Mariners, and well done to them. As Arnie pointed out in the press conference, it's so much better when they feel fresh and that they can really attack the game. But also the difference in that Josh Rose and Pej Boak make to that team, I think, is substantial. And having both of them back on the field was very, very important. So what happens coming up now?
Well, there comes a rub now because Pej got another card.
Oh.
So he's out of the next game.
Which is against Nagoya Grampus 8 in Japan.
Yeah, and Arnie brought him off towards the end of the game and gave Trent McClanahan a bit of a run, but he really didn't impress. So I think that's going to be a weakness.
Yeah. Well,
having him.
You know, Boak, you know, setting up those first two goals, he is just so vital. And Josh Rose scoring with his right foot.
He was that driving force in the first 20, 25 minutes that got the game really moving. So,
yep.
So they're going to go to Nagoya now, and they've got a win, having been a draw between Nagoya and Songnam. So a win, that's going to be the question mark. Can they do it?
And so there was...
And with Songnam needing to get something out of the game, they're not going to be going dead either, so...
Yeah. And so Songnam and Nagoya had a draw also on the same night, didn't they? One all. In Korea. So
yep.
That's match day 6, which is not until the 15th of May. So that's you'll have to hold your breath until then.
So they've got two more weeks, which will be good. They'll have a bit of time to sort themselves out.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so, just to see. Hopefully Arnie will still be around with us.
who knows? I mean, Brisbane Roar have changed their coach. So then tonight was the second day of match day 5 for the Asian Champions League, and at Hindmarsh Stadium, Adelaide United and Bunyodkor from Uzbekistan played out a 0-0 draw, which I'm pretty sure leaves Adelaide United certainly qualifying, but maybe even finishing top of their group. Is that? Am I telling the truth there?
Yeah, they with that result was sufficient, I think, even with any other result to qualify. The question now is, you know, whether they can get top of their group.
Yep.
And they cross over with our group, which is interesting. So.
Oh, okay. So that does make it very, very interesting.
I saw most of the game, and you know, it was first half, Adelaide pushing. They were mostly in the other Bunyakor's half, but Bunyakor quite dangerous on the break, and their player who whose name has just gone out of my head was creating, one man up front was creating still a fair bit of havoc. In the second half, Adelaide came under a lot more pressure, and Bunyakor were pushing up, but strangely he didn't make any. They started to you know run out of legs a bit, and strangely their coach didn't make changes till you know we're getting into the 80th minute. So made three changes in the last 10 minutes. So.
Yep. But it still made no difference because it finished 0-0.
No, there were a couple of chances, but you know, it 0-0, and the Adelaide fans are fairly good crowd there. Obviously, we'll be enjoying that.
Absolutely, and in a very rainy Tokyo this evening as well. It was lucky that it was raining, so we couldn't see the tears streaming down Thomas Brewich's face. I imagine they finished 4-2, FC Tokyo beating Brisbane Roar. But Adrian, Brisbane Roar took the lead very early in this game, and things looked good, but not for very long.
Yeah, held it for about a minute there, but yeah, best up pressure from a free kick, just getting his head onto it, and hit the post, but he was the first one to the rebound. So he got a nice early lead, but then FC Tokyo just hit straight back. The whole game, pretty much, really, it was just FC Tokyo let us play this time and let Brisbane have the ball, but they were so lethal on the counter, and at any time they had numbers, more numbers than us at the back, they were always going to score, and they managed to get four. We got a second when a bullet pass from Eric Paidaloo got Thomas Broich just in the box, and he went past his defender and shot with his left and just curled inside. But yeah, FC Tokyo got a penalty to make it 3-2 just before the half, and that kind of killed the game there.
Yeah. So I saw that that penalty. Did you see that one, Chris? Because this one we're going to claim was outside the box.
Yeah, I missed that one. I only saw the highlights of the end.
Yeah, you know, we'll go straight from being righteous indignation about everybody else complaining about the penalties that are all got to righteous indignation about we was robbed in Tokyo. I don't know that we were robbed, but certainly Adnan needs to be much more careful. Very clumsy challenge, very close to the penalty box, and really can't complain too much when that results in a penalty.
Not really. And yeah, he got subbed later on. I don't think Ryo was too happy about him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the certainly, if it wasn't already the end of the Asian dream for the Brisbane Roar, it certainly is now, because they are, I don't think, they must be bottom now with their goal difference being worse than Beijing. But Beijing also lost to who's our Korean team?
Ulsan Hyundai.
Ulsan Hyundai. So,
what was the scoreline in that one?
2-0 to Ulsan.
Well, we'll just have better goal difference then.
Oh, okay. So we'll still be better off than Beijing.
Yep.
Okay, excellent. So we're second last in the group, and that means that the final game that Brisbane play at home to Beijing will decide who doesn't finish last.
Oh, it's going to be a cracker.
It's going to be a cracker. I think.
Something to play for, and I think they've done. You know, for first go in the Asian Champions League, it really is quite a different kind of competition. They've done pretty well, really.
I think so. And they've played their own style of football throughout, which, you know, I can't help but think is still a bit naive.
Yeah.
Playing that style of football. The fact that they're in Tokyo on the night that it's bucketing down, and they're pressing forward so much and getting caught on the counter. Really, you know, should the away team be getting caught by counterattacks from the home team? I don't think so. I think that, you know, we really need to adjust the way they play away from home a bit, so that this sort of thing doesn't happen.
Really, the only team in world football that doesn't change is Barcelona. Everyone else has to adapt.
And, you know, Brisbane Roar aren't Barcelona much as we would like to think they are. Oh, they just aren't.
Pep left the same week. I mean, we don't know. It's all, they're following us now, really.
I think not.
They don't have to play like Adelaide, but you do have to realise that there is a different way of approaching games.
Well, in fact, Rado acknowledged that in the press before the game, saying, I think we need to play with two number sixes rather than two number tens. And they did. They had Bratton and Pardaloo both on the field, and so they would have set up in a slightly more defensive setup, but it seems that they still were getting caught on and the counter.
He played Tom through the middle as well, which was a good move.
Yeah, yeah.
Had to chase the game and in the wet conditions. They're pretty wet.
Yeah.
Very.
I certainly think that, you know, we can't give Roar a pass mark for their Asian Champions League this year, but it's certainly obviously a very valuable experience to have had. And you know, they're in the competition again next year as our Central Coast. Does anybody know, do we get three spots again next year, or was that just a one-off?
We're 10 teams, maybe we will.
Yeah. So as in, do we get three spots in the Champions League? So does Perth get a spot? I don't know.
Well, it'll be 2.5 if anything, but it should be, but we don't quite know exactly.
IFC do have a habit of reviewing fairly regularly what they're doing.
So
obviously, we need to have the 10 teams, otherwise we can't really justify 2.5.
That's true.
Over say places like Thailand and Singapore.
Well, I don't know that we can justify 2.5 anyway, but that's the way a Champions League seems to work, with the stronger nations getting more teams in it than they deserve. But anyway, so the prospect is that Perth would be the team that got that third spot by being beaten. Grand finalist, is that the way it would work?
And third place, anyway, it doesn't matter.
And third place, so the grand final would only have counted if they'd actually won it.
They're third anyway, so
qualify
for a playoff. Is there a playoff?
Well, there's still one more match day in Asian Champions League to go, and after that we will probably pop out another pod. But I want to say thank you to Chris and to Adrian for your time this evening.
No worries, Andrew.
And
I'm still very happy from last night.
Yes, I'm pleased for you. And we hope that all of those who are following Asian Champions League games and also looking closely at their own A-League clubs with a view to what happens next year have an exciting time until we talk to you again. We'll see you then. Okay, bye.
Bye all.